Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for this week's SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and as in each week at Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, we take the time to review three news stories from this past 7 days and look at how they might be helpful, either cautionary tales or informative lessons for institutions that are looking to grow their international education footprint. And today is like that, like any other week, in that we'll be looking at those three types of issues. And we'll be starting with an issue that we've talked about before on this podcast and on this live chat. And it's one that involves test optional. Those who have been in the international education business for a while know that test optional oftentimes is a way to help expand what your institution's reach might be to international students, and how broadly accepted your institution might be and welcoming it might be to international students. So I'm going to encourage you all to, as we go through this this live chat today, to not only think about where your institution is as in regards to test optional, but also what your policies are. We're also going to look at where you might be missing some opportunities. We're also going to look at the issue of CPT and how abuses of CPT seem to be more and more common in international education. And what we'll talk about is how some institutions maybe are they just being innovative in how they approach international student recruitment, or are they crossing a line? We'll discuss that a little bit more in depth. And the final article we'll refer to today is an important one for anyone who's doing digital marketing and involved in armchair recruitment of international students, and that involves SEO and the kind of the critical factors that you need to pay attention to in your work as you're reaching out to international students, and how important SEO is and how you tag things and have your using keywords and those types of things, how the landscape's shifted a bit in terms of SEO and how what some of the more important criteria are in that realm. And Catherine, thanks for joining me. It's good to have you on, and hope all is well with you. Where for those who are new to the podcast and to this live chat, these articles that I cover today, I post all the links to in the comments section on the Facebook page for SMIE Consulting. But I'll also share, for those who aren't aware, we do have a weekly newsletter that comes out Monday mornings, East Coast time, and that is where I pull the stories that I feature in this midweek roundup. And the SMIE Consulting, all the SMIE news fit to share. You can subscribe to that. I've just posted the link to this week's articles and that newsletter. It has my takes on these news stories that we're covering in brief, obviously, in social media sound bites. And I encourage all of you who aren't already subscribed to take a look and potentially sign up for that. This week's newsletter is, again, posted in the links. Where we'll start today, as I mentioned, is with test optional policies. For those who are in international admissions, this might be the bane of your existence in terms of your institution, or it might be something that you've embraced already at your college or university. For those that are considering recruitment of international students, one of the hurdles that many of them face is accessibility to exams, whether ACT or SAT, and that's what we're most commonly talking about when we say test optional, as it refers to international students. What we'd like to point out with test optional is there are and has been a growing trend over the last few years for international admissions offices to go test optional. And I should say domestic admissions offices to go test optional. For those that have followed this, there's a one site that keeps track of all this, and that's fairtest.org. And they have now boast over 1,000 institutions that have various test optional policies. The challenge is, which you'll also see, and I've just posted a link to fairtest.org site where they have the list of 1,000 institutions that are currently seen as test optional in one way or another. The challenge is that many of these schools, in fact, over 75% of the schools that are listed on that test optional site, only do so for domestic students. And using the logic that these tests, standardized tests, are not they're not necessarily fair for every demographic group in the United States, that economically disadvantaged students might not be as prepared for the SAT or ACT exam. We've heard those arguments. Anyone who's been in, at domestic admissions conferences, this is a regular occurrence on the conference circuit. But the challenge is, of that number, over 1,000 institutions, only about 225 or so, as of OACAC, or International ACAC now, report from 2016, only about a quarter of those 1,000, less than a quarter of those 1,000, have policies that are test optional that extend to international students as well. So what does that mean? Well, when you consider the logic of why test optional happens for domestic admission students, offices, I should say, is that they feel, again, as we said, that there's this disparity, that the tests are not made, are not equal access, equal opportunity, even though the testing companies, certainly my friends at College Board and ACT, will say that their access to their exams is equal for everybody. But the reality is those tests are designed for American students learning American English in U.S. high schools in the United States. And international students clearly do not fit into that category, even those that might be educated in U.S. high schools overseas, international schools overseas. They probably didn't grow up learning American English. So that's a real challenge. And if you look at the logic for why institutions go test optional for domestic students, because it's a test that's not fair for all involved in their admissions process within the United States, why is that now? Why can you not make that same jump to international students who are even, the test is even less designed for? So that's something that I've been beating the drum for a number of years. And what the release of this article it was actually an Inside Higher Ed that profiled two of the three institutions that I'm mentioning today. The first of which is not on the Inside Higher Ed article, but is Bucknell University in Pennsylvania. You also had Creighton University and Creighton Jesuit University in Nebraska, and then Ferris State in Michigan. All three posted their policies this past week in separate articles, as two of those three, Creighton and Ferris, were highlighted in the Inside Higher Ed article. But in each of these articles, there are specific references, and all of these policies are from domestic admissions offices, I should say. And in each of the three articles from the institutions themselves, you see that there are now exemptions to this test optional policy. So in Bucknell's case, they make the exemption, and I posted the links to all three institutions' policies. That for Bucknell, student athletes still have to have testing, standardized test scores of SAT or ACT, homeschooled students, and international students. And the reason they give for international students to still have to take SAT or ACT is to assist with verification of credentials. Now, I'm not quite sure I understand how a test score assists an institution understanding credentials. If you know what the credential system is, the education system is, you should know what it means and how that student is performing in that system. So I'm not quite sure I buy that explanation why international students are not included in that policy. Creighton University does also say that some form of standardized testing will, however, be required for students who attend high school outside of the United States, as well as for homeschooled students. So for those students, even at a private Jesuit university like Creighton, they are still, international students are still outside of the scope of what Creighton removing tests requirements for domestic students. It seems that kind of counterintuitive why that isn't then extended to international students. They don't really give an explanation why on this site for Creighton why international students are not included. So we'll just assume that's for similar reasons. The final institution, and this is where there is a caveat to their policy. This is at Ferris State University in Michigan, obviously a public institution. They have begun what they are calling a pilot project for test optional admissions, and they consider test optional because that they'll still consider test scores if they're submitted, but it's not going to be a requirement. The pilot program is limited in this respect to similar criteria to the Bucknell project, where student athletes, homeschooled students, and statewide and online students that are doing their high school curriculum virtually are still need to submit SAT or ACT scores. And that for athletes, we can assume any Division I or II program is going to need that for NCAA eligibility for scholarships and such. But international students are also on this list, whereas they will still need to be required, according to this Ferris State policy. The article itself, I had a friend contact me after he saw the article post in the newsletter this Monday. He contacted me, and thank you, Jim Crawley, at ELS, for finding this out. And I followed up. He followed up with Ferris, and I checked the international admissions site on Ferris's website, which doesn't reference exemptions for SAT from SAT or ACT there. But Jim confirmed separately that Ferris has been test optional for a number of years for international students. So this policy is coming out of the domestic admissions office, so we can understand why. And at larger schools, particularly state institutions, you can see that one hand doesn't always know what the other's doing. So I get that. So, but the challenge is, and I put this out to my colleagues on the international admissions side, if your institution is test optional for domestic, how can they justify not being test optional for international students? So I'd really like to hear from any colleagues that are in that situation at their institutions, because it seems to me a bit of a disconnect. And frankly, in this day and age, when there are increasingly barriers to admissions for international students, whether perceived or actual, in terms of our processes, we already have the most complicated admissions process in the world, in the United States, for our colleges and universities. With these standardized tests, why do we continue to beat the drum for them as a part of the required elements to making our ability to make a decision on whether to admit a student or not from abroad? So, food for thought. Hopefully, you can take that back to your institutions and make the case. So, we should be making it easier for students to pass through the many hoops that we jump through, or even removing some of those hoops altogether instead of harder. So, what's next? Let's switch gear to interesting article that. I give the caveat on this article as I post the link to it in our Facebook page. The article is from The Hindu in India, a major news outlet there. And the gentleman who is the author of the article, he is involved with agencies or in international education in Hyderabad. For anyone who knows, India is kind of the center of the universe for educational agents in that country, and they're more per capita than I think anywhere else in the world in Hyderabad. So this article itself speaks specifically to, and it's titled "Misuse of CPT Rampant." My colleagues who are on the international student services side, international advising side, certainly can testify to the regulations regarding this. This particular article, and the reason I say it's a cautionary one, is that it represents and has a lot of misstated, mis, mis, a lot of incorrect facts about CPT and OPT as part of its kind of outline. But what I will say is that the article does raise, from an Indian perspective, again, those who recruit in India and have Indian students on their campuses know firsthand that students are from India tend to be particularly hypersensitive to work opportunities. This has been, and it's not just me saying that, the statistics on how many students are in work opportunity currently, particularly OPT, over 76% of all OPTs are currently Indian citizens. And on the same on the H-1B side, applicants for H-1Bs and current holders of H-1B visas are predominantly Indian. So they make up a huge percentage of the students coming to the United States that are second largest sender to the United States right now. But they are also make up a huge, disproportionately so, percentage of the work opportunity, OPT and H-1B opportunities for legal work permission in the United States. CPT, which should be said, is part of the legal framework of work opportunities that is available to international students. And the regulations are very wildly different in terms of how they are interpreted at different colleges and universities. And this article makes reference to another person who's quoted here, Mr. Guyam, says that CPT can be given only after 2 semesters of full-time study. That's typically the regulations, and that is certainly the rule for undergraduate students. But for graduate studies, there is a caveat in the regulations that it can be done right away for the students on campus when it is integral to the curriculum. And the actual language is, I think, I'm just looking for another article that references this specifically, but it does say that if it's an integral integral part of the curriculum, then it is available to students, for graduate students from the start of their studies. And if you look at particularly the most recent example, and this article certainly references the Farmington, University of Farmington fake university scandal, was set up for students to pursue work opportunities from the first day. And that's how it was advertised, that if you already are in the United States, have a job, you're on OPT now, you can come to our program, start work right away, continue the work that you're doing right away, as long as you pay your tuition fees and register with us. That's the gist of how these University of Farmington students fell afoul, many of which, all but one of those that were arrested, were Indian, are Indian. So this is an ongoing challenge that our industry faces, and institutions that continue to use CPT as a tool to attract students in the past have been considered visa mills. And in fact, one of the students, we referenced this in an article a couple weeks ago from the BBC, one of the students that was arrested at Farmington had done his initial degree or first master's degree in the U.S. at Northwestern Polytechnic University out in California, one of the Silicon Valley sham universities that ICE and DHS shut down, or at least blacklisted 2 or 3 years ago. So I think the quality of individuals that were attracted to an institution like University of Farmington are already fairly suspect in my eyes, just based on their track record of where they were coming from in terms of degrees and where they were studying previously. So the misuse of CPT, and this article from India is characteristic, I think, of the hypersensitivity, as I mentioned earlier, to work opportunities in the United States. The author, I think, rightly says that that CPT opportunities are misused as a way to attract students. And CPT, and this is where the author, one of the several mistakes in the article, says that CPT is limited to 12 months. Well, it's actually not. It's actually can be an unlimited part of a student's curriculum. Beyond 12 months, they lose their OPT opportunity, but that's frankly not the reason students come to an institution where they can do CPT from day one. They're doing it to continue work that they're already doing. And my guess is on hopes that their employer will eventually sponsor them for an H-1B and they'll win the lottery and get in that way. But if that's not happening, they can continue their CPT throughout their degree studies, and they can go from one institution to another that offers these kinds of day one graduate studies. You can continue working where you are. So what are some of the other schools that are doing this? Other than Farmington and the University of North New Jersey had a very similar setup, you see institutions we've seen some of these in the past. We talked about the University of Campbellsville University and University of Redlands, both not University of Redlands, University of Cumberland, that are both in Kentucky that have developed programs that on face value are eerily similar to what we're talking about with University of Farmington. And they have crafted, both University of Cumberland and Campbellsville University have crafted, these are private Baptist institutions that have crafted master's degree programs that are geared towards currently working international students. In Campbellsville's case, they offer a master's degree science. Let's see what they're calling it, science and other. It's a master's degree, an IT, certainly a STEM program that has gotten some interesting. It's been found out a little bit in terms of how it's being perceived, and I'm sharing also now an article with that's also covers this issue from a third party institute. And Ranjit, thanks for joining. Good to see you. Hope you're well. And this article about CPT from day one that was obviously the folks at university or students who were attending University of Farmington found out the hard way. This one at Cumberland and also Campbellsville University, they have day one CPT available, and I've just posted another link to a story that that shows how the CPT day one is allowing students to start work from or to continue working at an institution that's continue working for a company as they move to another master's degree. And what I'll ask you though, those who are watching on now, is this CPT, even though if you're in international student services, hopefully you know the regulations well enough to know that we had this actually happen at an institution I previously worked at, and where we had before I came, there were a group of MBA students that had joined our institution and had been on OPT at a bank in another city, a couple hours away. And they were applying to our MBA program with the intent of continuing their work back at this other city, 2 hours away, to continue the work that they had at a bank there. So, but to maintain their student status, they were running out of OPT time, but to maintain their student status, they wanted to be enrolled in a full-time program and be able to work, continue the work at that other institution. But because our MBA program did not have internship or work experience as a requirement for that program, and it wasn't a critical or integral part of their curriculum, we wouldn't allow that to happen. It had happened by default in just previous years that I'd been there. But when I found out about this, this was something we shut down. I wasn't going to go that route because it's clearly an abuse of the system, students gaming the system, if you will. What I do see now is other institutions that are looking for innovative ways to attract international students, finding a niche in the market, and certainly Campbellsville and Cumberland in Kentucky seem to have done that very well, where they've seen growth of over 1,000 international students, so primarily from India again, at these new custom-built master's programs. So we're wondering where that's going, and I heard there was some talk on NASA listserv a couple weeks ago about hearing from students who are looking to get out of Campbellsville. So I'm not sure, that's again just on the NASA listserv, maybe I haven't seen anything in the press about it, so I'm not going to say anything more about it. But those kind of systems, this was shortly after Farmington broke that this happened at Campbellsville. So I'm curious as to what's going on. What your opinions are? Are these institutions kind of gaming the system themselves to try and attract students to pay reduced fees for their programs over a 4 or 5 semester time period, or is this just a clear abuse? Is this just playing within the existing rules? So that's something I would certainly welcome your feedback on and see where you all are on that. Now, the last article I'll share today is one that I'm one of the folks that I do some consulting work with, previously called Hot Courses. Now it's I was bought out by IDP a couple of years ago. They're now called ID. The Hot Courses brand is now called IDP Connect, at least for their higher ed outreach. They've put out an article this past week that I think is gold. It's covers one of those topics that's not the big sexy topics that we tend to talk about on a regular basis here, but it has to do with any institution that's really active in digital engagement with prospective students, when you're talking about your website in particular, and any other digital means you have of reaching prospective student audiences. I'm putting up links for those watching on the live chat. I've got the links up to our podcast of this live chat for those who just want to hear me and not see me. That's fine. I understand completely. And also to our smieconsulting.org website. What this has to do with is SEO. SEO is one of those topics that seems a little kind of underappreciated in frankly digital marketing, but for institutions it is absolutely essential when you're looking to get your content in front of the right students in the right media at the right times. And for those who have been in the business for a while, when you think of SEO, you're thinking of keywords, you're thinking of meta tags for your institutional site. But frankly, in terms of how search engines see your content. And ultimately, your content on your site, when you're talking about international audiences, it needs to be content that is relevant to them, that is enticing, that is appropriate for those audiences and accessible to them. Now, today, when you think about search engine optimization, it's a slightly different game now, and it's a way that looks at context rather than just how many pages you have with X number of keywords or X number of meta tags related to your content. It's more about looking at a thematic group of words that are semantically linked, as the article points out from my colleagues at IDP Connect. When you're looking to create content for your student users, is it in a way that allows them to get very specific with their search queries to be able to find the right answers? When you're talking about students now doing voice search on their mobile devices, now 20% of mobile queries now for Google are voice activated. So are the terms that students might be using test takers or intakes for certain parts of the world? Intakes is a very important part of their understanding of that's what they know about university life or admission to universities. So that's something you might want to be paying attention to if you're not already. And you're thinking about also that we're looking at when you're talking about critical issues for international students, we're talking about funding and costs, as well as visas. That kind of content needs to certainly be, if it's not robust and it's not taken seriously by your web folks and your content writers, it can really upset your results in terms of SEO when that's what students are looking for funding and cost information and visa information. So there's some great examples in this article, which we won't go into in detail now, but I certainly encourage you who are connected with the web content you have at your institutions to give it a look, and I'm sure that it will provide useful to you. So do check that article out from IDP Connect. For those who are not already following the podcast, it's available on our website on the smieconsulting.org site. You go to the subscribe link on that. You'll find links to the different versions that are on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, and Spotify. So you can access that. So while you're taking your morning walks or while you're trying to avoid a meeting and have your earbuds in, you can be listening to this podcast. So I encourage you to subscribe to that if you're not already, and to our email newsletter that comes out Mondays. That subscription link is also on the site. So encourage you all to get connected as often as you can, and very much appreciate you joining me for this weekly event. So I encourage you all to stay connected, and we'll look forward to seeing you in future episodes. Take care.